Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to another fun conversation on Culture Crush RX, brought to you by Anahata Marketing. This show is an ongoing exploration of what makes great company culture and how business leaders can help foster happy, productive, healthy teams where everybody is performing at their best. So today I have in studio with me Matt Altman, the co-founder and CEO of Sportique, a locally based custom apparel company whose mission is to help people feel comfortable. I originally heard Matt speak at a recent Conscious Capitalism event, and I immediately knew that I had to have him in to chat. So welcome, Matt. I can't wait to dive into this conversation with you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Of course. So I usually start every show with asking my guests what was their first job. So I would love for you to give me that brief introduction to whatever your first job was, because it's always an interesting insight into shaping who you are today. And then we can go from there right into your entrepreneurial journey and what took you here to Sportique.
So great question, because we've actually used it as an icebreaker with a meeting. So my first job was working at Peter Piper Pizza. Started with bussing tables and then worked my way to getting to make the pizzas, putting it in the oven, taking it out of the oven, and then, you know, calling the numbers.
Wow. And do you have kids today?
I have a stepdaughter. Okay. That's actually 28.
Okay.
And yeah.
I feel like if I ever worked at Peter Piper Pizza, I never would have had a child. I've only been there a handful of times and I can only take so much of Peter Piper Pizza. So how do you think that shaped who you are today? Do you think, what age were you when you started that job?
16.
16.
Yeah.
I think it's good to start working at a young age.
If I was old enough to drive, then it was like, okay, you have to go get a job. And so, yeah.
That's how it was in my household too. So tell me about, you know, where it took you from there. What did you study in college? And then how did you come up with
Sportique? So I went to the University of Arizona. I'm actually also a native. Okay. So born and raised in Phoenix, and went to the University of Arizona. Got my degree in accounting. Towards the tail end of that, I realized I did not want to be an accountant. It was a tough time, because I started to study for the CPA exam and was just really struggling and not liking it and didn't feel this was the path I should be on. And fortunately, while I was in college, I did an internship with the Phoenix Suns. That was just so fortuitous, and did that the summer 1993, right when they went to the NBA Finals. So it was such an exciting time in the Valley, and Charles Barkley was here. They go to the finals, and the demand for Phoenix Suns apparel products was just off the charts. And so my internship was in the merchandising department. And that whole summer was just a dream. Like, all I did was just work, work, work. I loved being around the arena and the environment. So that kind of was my intro into merchandising, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, my last semester of college, I got a call from the Suns offering me a job as the assistant director of merchandise. And that was my big pivot away from the accounting world into merchandising.
Awesome. Your savior, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
So that, obviously that has some, you know, we can kind of see where that leads into Sportique. So how did you come to, how long has Sportique been around?
Sportique was founded in 2006 by me and my business partner, Jason Franklin.
Okay. So how did you guys come about that little journey there and make that move into creating this clothing line?
Yeah. So I from 93 to 2005, I worked with the Phoenix Suns and Arizona Diamondbacks in merchandising. And that was just an amazing experience, especially being a part of the Diamondbacks at the addict's inception and being a part of everything from, you know, logo design, uniforms, and creating and helping build the retail locations and the ballpark. And was such a great experience. And something that, you know, I always cherished. And then, of course, going to the World Series. And so I got exposed to...
Maybe you're a sports good luck charm.
Oh, well.
It's an interesting little theme right there.
So, yeah, the opportunity to be in that space, I got exposed to so many facets of the business, from sourcing to design to operations, inventory, retail sales, and things of that nature. And I always gravitated towards the product side, namely apparel. that was just something I always studied too. When I was in a lot of meetings as a buyer, you're always getting presented in meetings where you're looking at all kinds of product. Mm-hmm. And I always was interested in how these people ran their business, how they sourced things and how they did things. And so I kind of was always a student of how they did things, and always kind of had in the back of my mind, you know, if I was to do it, this is how I would look to do it, and et cetera, et cetera.
Did you see yourself as an entrepreneur back then?
I did. It was one of those far-reaching things. Like, yeah, one day I would love to, you know, have a business and start a business. But, you know, I was still in my, you know, mid to late 20s, and I felt like I still had a lot to learn and grab from experience, but also from relationship and networking too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, as they say, these opportunities will present yourself when you're ready for them, right? Mm-hmm. So was there some spark that led you to say, okay, now is the time, and you decided that you guys were going to start this company, or what led to that?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I hit a ceiling, you know, in terms of where I could go with my career. Because frankly, you're always looking to grow and grow sales, but so much of our sales were predicated on wins and losses and how the team was doing. And so as many great ideas you have around doing things, that's a big one in terms of that you can't control if the team's winning and losing and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And so I started thinking, okay, what's next? Do I go to another team, do something different, things of that nature? And what I saw in my business partner as well, we saw this kind of opportunity, this white space in the licensed industry, where at that time, so if you go back to 2003, 2004, 2005, the landscape was very heavy in terms of jerseys. That was kind of the main driver in terms of revenue, which it still is today.
Yeah.
But in terms of licensed apparel, was heavy cotton t-shirts, really boxy, just slapping a logo on the shirt, really heavy screen print inks, no design aesthetic, no really good quality in terms of fabric and look and feel. And we had, I'll just say from my experience, we had season ticket holders coming to these games who are paying a lot of money for these tickets, and outside of coming to a game, they're maybe shopping at a boutique at Nordstrom's or Bloomingdale's, and they know good quality, and they're used to paying for good quality, and so there wasn't really anything for that customer, so they stopped coming into the store. And this was something that was very common in the industry at that time. And so that was kind of really where the idea was, to really bring better lifestyle apparel to the, what I would call the destination retail space, because this same scenario was also happening in corporate retail, resorts, music, entertainment, hospitality environments, because the same vendors were selling the same products in that space. And so that was really kind of the opportunity we saw. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, relationships and networking, being with the Suns and working with the NBA for 12 years, we had the opportunity to present this idea to them, which landed us getting a license with the NBA right when the company started. And that was just a huge benefit for us to launch the company and be credible from day one.
Yeah, that's amazing. But you now work with much more than just sports teams, correct? Okay, so what other industries do you service?
We do a lot in corporate retail. So a lot of corporations who have retail components to their business. So for example, Nintendo is a really big client of ours. And so when you're in the Nintendo store in Rockefeller Center, almost all that apparel is via Sportique.
Awesome.
Places like the Grand Ole Opry, to breweries like Sam Adams and Miller Coors, to Paramount Studios and Warner Brothers.
Oh, those are some big names.
And then we do a lot in the resort space, from Pebble Beach to a lot of the properties in Vegas, Caesars, MGM, Cosmopolitan, things of that nature.
Oh, that's very cool. Mm. Okay, so obviously this show, we like to talk a lot about company culture. Mm. So when you set out to create this company, did you put that vision for your culture together before you launched the company? Or how did you develop? Because I think you guys do have a unique culture. So maybe we can dive into what your culture is today. But I'm also curious how you intentionally created it, or how maybe it evolved.
So it was intentionally created, and then it for sure evolved, and it actually continues to evolve, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'll kind of give you the quick backstory. I read a book called Freedom Inc. And I read that book and I was like, okay, this is the type of company and culture that I would want to
create. I have not read that book. I need to read it.
They cite a lot of great examples of different companies and how they handle culture, but also how they handle just some operational things and customer service and things of that nature.
Okay. What are some of the, do you have a couple of like real tidbits that you pulled out of that that you think you still implement today?
So the thing for me, first and foremost, foundationally, is I wanted to create an environment that was really around freedom, first and foremost, and really looking at fundamental human needs, because ultimately it's people that are making the decisions, driving a business, things of that nature, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's fundamental to a human being? One, we all want to be happy. Mm-hmm. So we want to feel good. Mm-hmm. And we have this inherent need to learn as well. And so really fostering an environment where it's learning, you know, so really looking to be able to take risks and be okay with failure and learning from that so we can evolve and get better. I was just talking to someone yesterday, you know, about this because, you know, you can start, you can have this great trajectory, but at some point you are going to have a dip. It's just natural. That's just how energy
works.
Businesses
have seasons,
I mean, just energy in and of itself, it's a wave.
Yep.
And so for me, it's always, are we looking at the wave still as a trajectory going upward, knowing there's going to be these ebbs and flows? Yeah. And when you're in those, you know, that kind of downturn, like really, what are you to learn from that? What can you pick up so you can, when you get back on your upswing, you actually go higher than where you were before? And so really having a growth mindset, period.
Right.
You know, for myself, but then also for the people that are at Sporty.
Yeah. So when you are interviewing a new hire, what do you, you know, in what ways are you assessing if they're in that space? If they kind of inherently have that growth mindset.
Well, you have to ask, you know, you have to ask specific, you know, those types of questions to kind of understand and then ask for examples, you know, of what they've done in their career that can show you that they've gotten through certain experiences and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Question sometimes that I'll ask is, how do you handle a bad day?
Yeah.
Right. And that'll reveal some things too around that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. So you guys, I mean, what are the core values that you've established with Sportique? Is that something that you know, run down with those potential employees before they even come in the door? Or
so usually when they're hired, that's when that would take place. But a lot of times as you're getting towards the end of an interview process and you really like someone, you're revealing more of the company and the values. And so I think the big one for Sportique is teamwork. Mm-hmm. First, when I go back to those fundamentals, like fundamentally, we do want independence. We like a sense of independence, mm-hmm. but we need community.
Right.
And so it's an interesting dichotomy. So how to give people just enough elbow room so they feel free and they have that independence and they can be themselves, but then also to be able to interact in a team environment and have community and whatnot. Because there's no way you can grow and scale without teamwork and camaraderie and good communication.
100%.
And trust and understanding. So I think teamwork is really a big value for Sportique. And then I think the other one is respect. Mm-hmm. Is really having respect for a person. And this really goes back to, how do you want to be treated?
Right.
You want to be treated with respect. And so really being forthcoming with that. We have up in the office a word called Gen Shy. It basically means to not treat someone as if they feel small. So really treating people equal, not talking down to someone, and really being a little more uplifting and equal in how we interact with everyone.
Okay, interesting. Excuse me. So using that as an example, you know, when you're running a company, if you notice that you have somebody that's maybe not exhibiting that value, or they're not treating people in that way, What's the way that you would kind of manage that? How do you handle that when you see somebody that's kind of falling out of line with it? Or does that just generally not happen too much with you guys?
So it's happened. And usually, you look to have a conversation with that person and really try and get to the root cause and understanding where is it coming from. Because sometimes the interest and the intent is correct, but how it's maybe being handled.
And there's something that's unaware.
So how to bring that to the forefront and have some awareness around it.
Yeah.
I will say, probably 5-6 years ago, I got a really good lesson around hiring with alignment to values and culture versus amazing skill set.
Okay.
And so we had someone who was highly skilled, highly experienced, was able to really open up some doors, drive revenue, but from a culture standpoint was not a fit. And it really challenged everyone in the company in terms of how they felt and the experiences that they were having. And then being able to respond and perform and be a good team player to that person, So that was my big lesson, to really make sure alignment and culture and skill set were equally matched. And sometimes I've seen it better to have better culture and values fit, and that person can learn and evolve around the skill set.
That seems to be something I'm hearing more and more of, and a lot of people are kind of leading their businesses in that way, because the skills, as they say, the skills can be taught. People can learn, especially if you've already assessed that they're in that growth mindset. But that inherent culture piece.
I'll give you an analogy.
Yeah.
So if you have 10 people in a room and one person is got the flu and is sick, so those 9 other people cannot help and make that person get better, right? Mm-hmm. But that one person who has the flu and sick can get the other 9 the flu and they can get sick, right?
That's a great
analogy.
So
I think it's something to look at, when you have, not only when you have a business, but when you just have a community and environment, mm-hmm. how, you look at things.
Yeah, and you don't have an enormous team. So I think sometimes that, that bad grape or whatever, like they're a little more apparent in a small team.
It stands out.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you do in that case where you said you learned that lesson? Did you have to let that employee go?
Yes.
Is that, so as the business owner, I think because you seem like a sensitive person, like I know myself in that role, I would hate that part of it. So how do you manage that? Is that just kind of something where you have to tell yourself, this is part of the process?
Yeah, so it's part of the process. And frankly, we were making a hard look at the business at that time. And that section of the business was not performing well for us. So all performance from a metric standpoint, dollars and cents standpoint, also helped with that decision as well. So it was a little easier around that conversation. But I will say, again, from learning from that lesson, we've had a couple of hires that day 4, we knew that was, you thought you caught everything in that interview, and day 4, they let them go. We let them go. So the takeaway is really try and nip that in the bud quickly.
Right.
And especially when you had other people in the organization already seeing something by day 4, we had to make that change.
Yeah, because interesting, that is an interesting point, is when you have to do that, when you have to let somebody go because they're not a fit, that does speak to everybody else on the team that you truly honor what your culture is and that you want people to show up and live those values.
And I think, again, going back to just the team environment and community, when we look to bring someone in and hire someone, they've got to obviously have that skill set, and then they also have to have that culture fit. And so the hiring party will do a lot of that vetting. But then prior to any kind of offer or whatnot, they're meeting other team members, maybe doing something social and having lunch, mm-hmm. or meeting for coffee, or that other person is coming back into the office. But other members of the team who may not even be connected on a day-to-day basis with this person will get to meet them, mm-hmm. and give feedback around just from a culture fit. Just look, because we've already said this person would be great from a skill set standpoint, but are they going to fit well into Sportique?
Yeah. Yeah. Which again, I think that's something that many of the people that I've spoken with on the show have shared, that that's a strategy that is pretty effective in assessing, you know, where those culture fits are. So you kind of had, you mentioned to me at some point something about you guys really do try to have social impact. Can you explain a little bit about that and how that plays into your company?
Yeah. So it first starts with, you know, our why, and really to help people be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of, that goes from our products and that we produce from an apparel standpoint. You know, we really want the fabric and the fit and the feel to be great, mm-hmm. and to feel good when you put it on and have this aha moment or this wow experience when you connect with the product. But then it also goes to how we interact with each other internally as a team, and then obviously externally with our customers and supply chain and things of that nature. And, you know, me and my business partner, I think we both really have a passion around child education, which I think can lead to how the next generation can evolve in a positive way. And quite frankly, where we've kind of landed is really helping kids in crisis, whether it's emotionally, mentally, environmentally, health-wise as well. And so we've really looked to partner with local organizations and national organizations around that. There's a great organization here in town called UMOM, if everyone isn't familiar with it. And so we do a lot from a resource standpoint and product standpoint in supporting their work, namely with the kids and teenagers that they have going through that program, because it's the parents who are homeless, but the kids, you know, they're riding along with that, right? Mm-hmm. And so they do a really good job of helping educate so that cycle is broken.
Yeah, no, that is a great organization. Do your employees also go and donate time there, or are you encouraging them to volunteer there?
Last year we did, and we're planning this holiday to do so as well.
Oh, fantastic. That's really good. So that, I kind of want to touch on, you were talking about, you know, bringing in your suppliers, and I know you're members of Conscious Capitalism, so that's obviously how you run your company, but I love to share that whole message with our listeners too. So maybe can you give me your take on the Conscious Capitalism movement, and then how you are making your company a, you know, a Conscious Capitalism company?
Sure. So when I first heard the phrase Conscious Capitalism, I immediately liked it because of the word conscious, mm-hmm. right? That's actually my life goal, is to really work to be as conscious as I can. So first and foremost, people are who can be conscious, and capitalism is the vehicle in terms of, you know, free enterprise and how to do a business, which mm-hmm. just came back from their Conscious Capitalism CEO Summit. And it's just amazing when you hear a speaker who's from Africa who's saying capitalism is what got me out of poverty. It's what's got our village right. out of poverty. So sometimes it gets a bad rap,
it does,
you know, business. The thing that I really gravitate around Conscious Capitalism is its approach, right? So first, you know, having a higher purpose to the business, that it's just not here to make money.
Right.
You know, where us is really to help people be comfortable in their life. And I think that's ultimately goes back to a fundamental human need that we want to feel good.
Yeah.
So what are we doing in our organization to help, you know, in that regard?
Right.
Not only just in product. Conscious culture, conscious leadership are big components. And then this other one is stakeholder integration, which I'm really glad when Conscious Capitalism was thought out to really incorporate this properly, because it's stakeholders are owners, investors, employees, customers, mm-hmm. supply chain, vendors, things of that nature.
They include an environment in there too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I really enjoy that too.
And so how is all of that holistically being treated? Mm-hmm. Are you just doing things to support the owners and the investors, and who cares about the employees? Or I'm just going to take care of the customers, but I don't care about the investors. Like, and that's when you kind of have not healthy organizations, and it's really hard to grow sustainably.
Right.
And I think the big thing around Conscious Capitalism is looking long term, versus short term. So the big thing with that is doing really what's right for the company and for the business and its stakeholders long term, mm-hmm. versus what do I need to do today to drive the stock price up?
Right.
And so that's actually one of our key standards is what are we doing today that's going to help the company 5 years from now? So we're making decisions all the time, but are we really making a decision that's going to help us in five years and kind of looking long-term in our thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, can you give any examples of, you know, what would be the difference? I mean, you're a clothing company, right? So you obviously have to sell product now. But, you know, like if we talk about the environment or how you source your clothing, like there's something that's going to come into play a few years down the road. So like, what would be some examples of some, I'm trying to like come up with a decision that you might make that if you made decision A today, how different would it be, or decision B, and you're looking at the long-term strategies, but, you know?
Yeah. So it's not perfect, right? So for me, it's going into every scenario with a long-term mindset. And so, you know, we are partnered with the same production facility for the last 11 plus years. Mm-hmm. And that's been a great partnership because we've both have had the best interests of each other and the work, you know, at the forefront. And so just real quick for me, stakeholder integration is really about win-win. It's super, super simple that if I win, you win, and then we all win. Whether it's me and a supplier or investors and employees, like every, you know, if the investors are winning, employees and women should be winning, and vice versa, mm-hmm. right? And so, in sitting down, we're really looking at long term strategy, and why I say it's not perfect because I spent. And our team spent a significant amount of time last year working to create a supply chain in LA and in Mexico, and mm-hmm. we did a lot of back and forth, a lot of vetting, and we came to a good decision that this was going to be a good long term partner. So mm-hmm. I'll fast forward to the story is in 3 months it was done.
Okay,
and it was because, and that was just simply because. We weren't getting product, good quality product, and getting it, you know, delivered on time. So the general business contract that you have with two parties
right.
in terms of quality of product, delivery, and things of that nature wasn't there. So
right.
you have to move on. But when it's there, it's great.
Right.
It's really, really good. And so it's fluid. You always have to be checking in and having, you know, honest conversations with your partners, because they need to be profitable as I need to be profitable, and if they're not, they're not going to be able to operate efficiently.
Right.
So
yeah, that makes perfect sense. And you know, when your whole idea is you're trying to make comfortable clothing, kind of really has to be that. So that's right. An important factor. All right. So going back to, you know, maintaining your company culture, what kinds of programs do you have in place internally, or how are you, you know, ensuring that your employees are always growing, always finding those opportunities to learn while they're at work? Do you have any specific methods in place for that?
I wouldn't say we have methods in place per se. I think it's a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
First,
I think everything is a mindset.
Right. Right. Yeah. But, I think it's a mindset. I mean, we do some fun team building exercises that really helps connect us. I think our environment is free too, so people can really be themselves in things of that nature.
Where is your office located?
We're actually here in Tempe, major okay. crossroads at Priestin and University.
Oh, okay, so you did not have to come far to travel.
No,
here.
I didn't.
Yeah,
no.
Excellent.
One of the values too for us is can do attitude.
Okay,
and again, this goes back to mindset. Is mm-hmm. You might not be able to do X, but I can do Y, and to be able to articulate that accordingly. We just did an exercise at our last company lunch where we partnered up. And people shared with their partner what they can do in the next 90 days, either personally or professionally, and really then have that person act as an accountability partner along the way. And then we shared as a group, and then, you know, but there's that one person that can be accountable to help with that person doing what they said they can do.
Which so many of us need that little nudge sometimes. It's easy to let yourself down, yeah. Unfortunately. I really like that you say, you frame it as the can do. I think that's a very good thing. So rather than, you know, focusing on your limitations, focus on your skills. That's a really nice way to put it. So how often do you guys do your company meetings, company lunches?
We do a company lunch once a month.
Okay.
It's a great opportunity for us to get together and, you know, just eat, laugh, you know, what, and it's also an opportunity for just give some high level updates on where we are with the business. So always review financials, how we're doing with our key goals around sales and gross margin and units sold, and what's kind of really trending and doing well.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity to kind of, you know, give an update of just some key things that happened in the past month, look at where we're going in the next month. And each, we have four main teams, sales, marketing, operations, accounting, and our creative department. So each give a little update in terms of what happened and things of that nature. And then depending on, you know, what's happening in the business, it's great if there's a deeper presentation around, could be around product, it can be around process, something new to share, things of that nature.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. It gives people a little sense of ownership when they know, you know, where things are going and what the goals are. So on that note, where is Sportique going? What do you guys have on the horizon?
So we have a lot of really fun things on the horizon, both from our what I would call our B2B growth, which is the core of our business, creating custom apparel to the destination retail market. We keep adding new accounts, you know, every day, looking to expand new territories with employees to oversee certain markets. And the big challenge for the company right now is establishing the brand. Most people don't know who Sportique is, and that's going to change in the coming year in terms of some branding and marketing initiatives that we're doing to not only do B2B, but also direct to consumer.
That's what I was going to ask you. Can consumers buy direct on your website?
Consumers can buy direct on our website. It's at sportique.com.
Yes.
Q.
We'll post that in our show notes here, the actual URL. But yeah.
Oh, thank you.
That one does trip. It tripped me up the first time I tried to find you, actually. So right now, if they want custom apparel, is it like when you, because if you go to the website right now, can you get something screen printed with something specific that you want, or you can just buy a...
So if you're at sportique.com, that would just be direct to consumer. So we offer some key styles in our collection available online for sale.
Okay.
And then sportiquewholesale.com is our B2B site.
Gotcha. Okay.
Where we get really into the customization. So we have a full collection, men's, ladies, youth items, and also headwear that we'll present to clients. And then we also have a full library of graphics that we offer to clients. So they can look through that library and we'll incorporate their logo into that graphic. Or in some cases, we can do more customization if that's required with the client. So, you know, we take an inventory position on our blank apparel, and then our clients are looking at that collection. Okay, I like that sweatshirt. Can I do that graphic? And
perfect.
And there we go. We fuse it together.
Okay. So if you wanted, like, you know, some shirts for your company or a sport, like, would you do like a local sport team if people wanted that? Or is it mostly if somebody wants like a corporate kind of
thing? So I mean, it really depends. Like, so our minimums, you know, are right around 72 pieces per color, per style. Okay. So we have a lot of companies in town that want Sportique for their company business, whether it's for resale or for their employees or to give to clients. That happens a lot as well.
Okay.
And then we do work with like Four Peaks Brewery. We do a lot with them, with headwear and apparel, to the Phoenix Suns, obviously here in town, and a number of, you know, different corporate accounts.
Okay, fantastic. What do you have, like, favorite types of companies that you like to work with? Or you're obviously got the sports niche. Can you do something for the Cardinals? Come on, man. You've got this. You helped the Suns get there. You helped the Diamondbacks. What's going on with the Cardinals?
Well, so there's this thing called licensing.
Right.
And that's what prohibits us from doing something with the NFL and the Cardinals.
Of course. Of course. I'm just saying they need some good juju.
Yeah.
They need some help.
They've had a good run. And I think this year it's probably a little bit of a down year.
Yeah, a little bit. So far, anyway. Anyway, this is not a sports show. I know we've got our producer, Dan, over there. He could chime in on all kinds of things about the Cardinals right now, I think. So any other details?
Well, I will say you asked, like, what are some of your favorite companies? So I think as a whole, I have an affinity towards the NBA. And obviously growing up in Phoenix and being a native was a Suns fan. And then obviously working there, there's an affinity towards that. But the NBA's just started. It's going to be a really exciting season. Mm-hmm. But now I'm a fan of all the teams because we do business with all of them.
Right.
So I think as a whole, though, it's a fun environment. It's a fun business. And
well, and you'll always have that kind of, because it was where you got your start, right?
Right, yeah.
So yeah, there's always a little fondness there, for sure. Do you think if you had not started there, would you, well, I mean, that's always like a tricky question because we're all exactly where we're supposed to be right now, right? You can't know how the path would have played out differently. But if that opportunity hadn't been there, do you think you would have still led you to this?
To
creating this company?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer because from that, I could honestly say that start of pivoting out of accounting and going into, you know, merchandising led it all those things lined up to be here today. But if I stayed in accounting, then it's a different ballgame, and I have no clue what that would look like.
Yeah, right. Well, the accounting background is probably helpful though in running a business. It's nice to have.
And that was really the whole point of the decision to even major in accounting. I really didn't know what to major in. And I said, okay, I knew I liked business. And so it's the basis of business. Having this framework or this knowledge would be helpful. And quite frankly, it was extremely helpful when I started with the Suns, having that background. And then it's definitely helped in starting Sportique, having that kind of understanding and whatnot. Now, I'm not an accountant and I will not profess to be one, but understanding it helps a lot.
Well, for sure, because there's definitely a lot of people that start businesses without that level of awareness, and that could be a real hindrance, for sure. And how long have you been with Conscious Capitalism as a member?
2 years now.
2 years, okay. Yeah, because it was something that's relatively new in my sphere, as far as I didn't know a lot about it, but I definitely, what is the tagline? It's capitalism as a force for good, right? I believe.
The international conscious capitalism is really elevating humanity through business.
Okay. That's beautiful.
And to me, I think it's great. Because I think that's to me what it's really all about.
Right.
It's about people. It's about humans. You know, being here on the face of this earth, having this opportunity to do so many things. And so to be able to connect with a company and a business to either work for or consume, you know, be a consumer, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I like that too, because I do think there is a movement toward consumers. You know, you're creating consumer goods that people are becoming a lot more aware of the fact that they can research a company and they want to do business and buy products from companies that are good and have good leadership and that have good intentions in this world. I think that's a shift that I see happening anyway. It could be because I kind of live in that world, but I hope that trend continues.
Yeah, I mean, it is a trend, and I think it will continue to. I think the technology and how information is shared and how quick we can learn certain things that only helps the consumer in making a decision. I think a big thing was I got to learn a little bit more about the founders of Fairtrade and how that really was born out of. It was really the aid wasn't helping in the environments that it was being provided, but trade did. Trade, capitalism, and fair trade back to the workers and the village is really what made the difference. Not, hey, here's some aid. The aid never really helped and enabled, and where trade has empowered. And so that was really, enlightening. So then understanding how are businesses operating, you know, consciously? How are they, A, treating, you know, their people, and is there fair labor, you know, and I'm talking even just in America, right?
Yeah. So, and also understanding where people are sourcing their products from, right? Because that matters too. If that, that's all part of it. So I love that. And I love that example you gave of the gentleman from Africa that basically stood up and said, this is what saved my village. Love to learn more about that. Are there any other details about Sportique or about your culture that we didn't touch on? Are you guys currently looking to hire more or anything?
Yeah, we are looking to hire. We're actually looking to hire in all aspects of the business.
Okay.
You know, knock on something, we're in growth mode. And the last 3 years we've had, you know, 20% growth. And this year we're over 30, right around 36% growth. And so what comes with that is growing pains and needing new support. So like every department we are looking to add by the end of the year.
Okay, awesome. Is there a careers page on your website if somebody's interested in learning more?
It's not updated, but it will be after this this episode.
Okay. By the time we get this pushed out as a podcast, we'll have a careers page updated. So anybody's looking for a job or spread the word. And so if somebody wants to get in touch with you or learn more, where do they find you? Can they find you on LinkedIn?
They can find me on LinkedIn. Okay. I'm on Instagram, maltman9,
okay.
and at sportique.com.
Okay, and Sportique is sportique.com if anybody wants more information. Any last closing thoughts? Clothing. Did you hear that Freudian slip?
Yeah, clothing comments. Well, with that note, I think I have to say something about the clothes.
Yeah.
First of all, I appreciate you, you know, doing the work that you're doing and not only highlighting, you know, businesses and entrepreneurs, but just what they're standing for and how capitalism really is good. And there is some really good people doing some great things. And I think usually the great people doing great things, nobody knows about it because they're not doing it because they're trying to get attention.
Exactly.
They're just doing it because it's the right thing to do.
This is exactly why we have this entire station, actually.
Yeah. So,
as we're trying to really shine the spotlight on those folks, because you're right, they're not the ones that are standing up with a megaphone and saying, "Look at me, I'm doing all this great stuff."
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really appreciate you coming in and sharing, and exactly the type of company that I'm trying to, number one, highlight, and also let our listeners learn from. So because I do have this fascination with culture, because I personally think, you know, we all spend so much time at work, right? There's a really important part of enjoying that, like getting up in the morning and feeling like you're making a contribution, that you're doing something that helps society fuels you. Right? Because nobody wants to go to work and feel completely depleted. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be like getting up and being like, "God, I just can't wait for Saturday." You know, I don't think that's a good way to be. So if you can create a place where people are helping you on your mission, but they also feel like they're doing something that fulfills them,
right,
then you're going to have a much better company.
And I would just take it one step further. It's really that ultimately, again, I go back to this fundamental human need. Like, we want to be fulfilled. We want to do meaningful work. And for us to actually be healthy as humans, it's through work and creating. It's how we, you know, gather and use energy and things of that nature. And we all have unique gifts, talents, and strengths. Mm-hmm. And if you can hone in on what those are and be in a place where you can use those gifts, talents, and strengths, you're gonna, I think, have fun in what you're doing. And it really won't be as much as work as wow, I get to just do this, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's also important too. And as you're looking to hire and align people into a role, is there a match around their gift, talents, and strengths, and how can that come
absolutely
out for them to really do that?
Right. Know? Yeah, that is true. Because as much as we kind of downplayed skills, I do think it's very important for leaders in a company to recognize a person's inherent skills and put them in the right roles. Because sometimes that's all that happens, is somebody's not quite in the right role and they're not shining because it's kind of going against the grain of who they naturally are, and they may not even be aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big fan of any of those tools, you know, like any of the assessments or anything that can help us really identify some of those motivators. Or communication styles matter too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not here to plug it, but we do use Predictive Index.
Do you?
And it's been a helpful tool first we did it just for everyone to see what their predictive index was and then to be able to share it as a team. And then also each team to then see how each person interacted and how using predictive index is a good means to understand, oh, this is how this person looks at things and might make a decision or not make a decision and things of that nature.
Absolutely.
And then now it's ingrained as a hiring tool for us.
Yeah, you know, it's a super valuable tool. Because I think we all have a tendency to, I mean, it's human nature to assume that people think like we do. And when someone rubs you the wrong way, if you can take a step back and kind of look and say, oh, that's just the way that this person does this or thinks about this, it's just different than how I do. And just that awareness can really help you be more compassionate and understanding. You got a fan spying on us right here. All right. So we are coming close to our time here, but this has been a really fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you coming in and sharing. I'm excited for everybody to get to listen. You can find Sportique again at sportique.com, sportique.com. And I want to thank everybody for listening to us on Culture Crush RX. This show is sponsored by Anahata Marketing, and we are very proud to be part of the Phoenix Business Radio X community. And as always, I hope that you've taken away some valuable insights to help you build a better work environment. Thank you so much.